the appreciation, even though like we always compare, oh, OCR how much, CCR how much, all this stuff, but the ultimatum, right, actually is in the project itself.
So sometimes the perspective also come from existing owners owning boutique projects. Like they have held it for 10 years and then they're just scratching their heads. Why is it that mine is freehold? My appreciation over the last 10 years was not as good as my neighbor. That 99 is appreciated much more than my freehold.
We don't have a clear cut answer because we understand that properties right have different attributes.
You can still buy into this older 99 years because they provide the kind of option that around the area is lacking.
Those 15%, they decide
to contest you. You can invite them to the
live
debate.
They never contest lah. Just like, you know, like they were
live debate lah. We can set a live debate for you. 1v1, this unit versus that unit. Okay. Hey, how do you feel when we put your name?
I got a shock of my life.
Why?
I heard that I was just a replacement. I saw the previous presenter and apparently she's not free.
Supposed to be Joan.
Joanne.
Because she was the one that did a live debate. We want to talk about HDB, BTO. Hey, wait, where are my clothes?
I passed by. It was available. And I took it.
First mover advantage.
Yeah, totally.
So he took it.
It's quite oversized.
But clearly it doesn't fit him. So first mover advantage doesn't really apply. You also need to know what you want.
Okay, cool.
Okay, but anyways, let's welcome Jesley. Jesley, could you give our audience a quick introduction about yourself?
Hi, everyone. I'm Jesley, listing manager. I've been in PLB for past 2 years. Great. Thank you.
Jesley is also a limb.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm actually Beatrice's sister. No kidding.
I was trying to recall, are there any other female inside sales team that end with the surname Lim? Then okay, only think Beatrice and Jess Lee only.
Only two only? Two Lims only.
Melvin, Adrian, Beatrice, Jess Lee. Really?
Mew Lim.
Yeah, limited.
Lim.
Okay, so we want to answer some of the questions that came into our Nuggets on the Go YouTube channel. Thank you for the questions. I think we saw a lot of questions in the comments box, especially for the live debate as well. So if you have missed the live debate, the full episode was actually uploaded on NOTG. And that was like a 2 hours full-on session. We did twice. One was between condo and landed. The first one was between resale HDB and BTO. So today we're going to talk a lot more about BTOs and of course the development of HDB apartments and properties and what's going to happen likely in the next few years. But before we kickstart, we want to answer about 2 to 3 questions. So thank you for writing. Maybe we can start with George first. George, why don't you pick one question and then we kickstart.
Sure. I think got one question which is quite interesting. Like, could you explain how come for EU Habitat so many people make losses? Actually, I just saw this question like a couple of minutes ago. So whenever I see something like, you know, I think we have been talking about first mover advantage as well as the herd mentality. I think this doesn't encompass fully in terms of the project performance. One key fundamentals is we also need to look at the entry price. That means probably the entry price for EU Habitat back then is how does it stack up against some of the other projects? I started to take a look at some of the other slightly bigger projects that is near to MRT station. There's this freehold project called Paya Lebar Residences. Freehold just right beside Paya Lebar MRT station. So if you look at EU Habitat back in the days when it was launched, that was about, I think, 2010, 2011.
Mm.
Yeah.
Let me just bring out the...
Yeah,
profit and loss for this project.
Well, we're pulling out all the data. If you look at some of the entry prices for EU Habitat in 2011, the prices was about 1,002, 1,003, 1,004 PSF. To give context in terms of the price point, we take a look at Paya Lebar Residences. In 2011, back then when they transacted some of the prices over there, freehold right beside the MRT, they transacted at about 1,001 PSF. So of course, Paya Lebar Residences is older, but I think back then, in terms of the options, to me, I would think that Paya Lebar Residences is a clear-cut winner, purely because freehold beside the MRT station, the PSF is quite attractive compared to EU Habitat. So I believe that could be one of the reasons that, you know, resulted in the losses today. We haven't deep dive in terms of like things like floor plans and all this stuff, which will also affect how the project performs.
Actually, Paya Lebar Residences, do you know what was the name before they renamed?
Yeah, they have a name. I forgot.
It's called Vijaya View.
Yeah.
How you pronounce that again?
Vijaya View.
Vijaya View.
Yeah, then you rebrand yourself.
Yeah, they rebranded the name. Okay, but that one is freehold beside MRT station. And of course, that project was launched, I think, quite far back already, about 20 years ago. Mm. For U Habitat, you know, this was completed 2015, 2010. This is a Far East development, 697 units. When we look at this curve, this is like a U-shaped curve right now. Mm. And profitable transactions, 234 transactions. Unprofitable, 53 transactions with the highest loss amounting to 302,000 that was bought at launch. Mm. I believe this could be like a 3-beta. And it was sold in 2020 before the COVID run up for the pricing. And then of course, there was another loss. If you look at this, even though the person sold after the COVID run up, but they still had a loss because they bought, I think they are the very, very first owner purchased at 1429, so at 1246. Maybe are you wrong? Do you got any view on this? Like, why is it that this project didn't follow the herd mentality?
Okay, as in, if we just go up to the pricing trend, right? A little bit. Okay, so over here, right? Usually, number one, when you have a project that is good in number of units, right? One of the things is this is the era of when the new launches, when they launch, right? The pricing, you can see that there is a huge gap. So from the lowest PSF, right? $800 PSF all the way until 1,005 PSF range. Mm. So you can still be profitable in this kind of projects, right? When we know that number one, to understand herd mentality is not everybody enter at the same pricing when you buy at the same new launch stages, right? Of course, PSF is just one angle to look at. Of course, generally, if we exclude that this is a bad facing, we exclude that this is an inefficient layout, usually the lower PSF will help you to go in at a lower risk level. So for example, if I were to be able to enter at something that's 1,000 PSF, you will know that at the average PSF now that is closer to 1,004 PSF, right, I will be profitable. Mm. And so if you look at all the 234 profitable transactions in U Habitat, you realize that all those that were profitable, their entry price is actually 1,000 to 1,100 PSF kind of range. So that's one. And if you were to look down to all the unprofitable transactions, they have already entered at 1,003, 1,004, right? So hence, to those who entered at 1,004 is a flat line. Yeah, so that's one thing to note. Second thing is for U Habitat, there is a huge unit mix of 1 and 2 betas. And when they are selling the 1 and 2 betas, they have the different concepts. For example, like loft units with higher ceiling height, etc. And to invest in 1 and 2 betas, we want to know that when you have a lot of units, the developer will launch a huge range in terms of sizing wise. Okay. Mm. And most of the time, sizing wise, then we have that quantum play to take into account, which means that people who are buying 1 and 2 beta, usually they work with a certain kind of price point and a budget. And so if we enter at a too big floor plate of a 1 beta and 2 beta, what it will translate to is actually higher entry price. So when it comes to resale market, to the buyers, they will think, hey, why not I go for the more effective or like the smaller layout size? And that helps me to save another 50K to 100K off the entry price right now, and hence that is why these are the combination reasons for U Habitat.
Right. So in fact, when we look at a lot of the 53 transactions, it seems like predominantly 90% are 1 betas that's seen a loss. I think it could also be attributed to the reason that it's very easy to purchase a 1 beta. And of course, 1 betas are fantastic for dividend play, very easy to rent out, very easy to look for a tenant. But when it comes to exit, I think the main competitor will still be other new launches, because it seems like based on observations over the past like many years, a lot of buyers for 1 betas, they love to buy new launch, either because they are single professionals, they are not in a rush to move in, they're buying for maybe like an investment property, and thus usually the new launch one business attracts a lot of the buyers compared to like the resale market. So like when it comes to the resale market, maybe in terms of buying power, the buyers are not really willing to pay a premium to take over the unit in a sense. Mm.
Actually, it's more on like a PSF play. So if you see, and this is unprofitable transactions, right?
Yeah.
And we are sorting by unit area, 517, 527 square feet.
Yeah.
You will see that those that are making losses, they enter at a PSF of like 1,000, 3,004.
Yeah.
If you look up to the profitable transactions, if we sort by the same thing, unit area, those that are profitable, 517, 527 square feet, you see that they are
1,001.
Their entry price is like 1,001.
So that means they enter at the last phase of the launch, which was when the developer increased pricing. Right. Jesley, why don't we pick a question and then see which question do you want to answer?
Actually, I got something to share about UHabitat.
Okay.
Last time I used to give tuition there.
Okay.
That's where I met like one of the parents who own about two or three units.
Where was that? That was before real estate.
Before real estate. Maybe it was just launched. Because when I went in there, I remember it was very empty. Most of the units are
POP. 2015,
yeah, maybe just
2015, 2016.
Yeah, so I asked, hey, how come you got so many units here? So
how many units again?
Like two to three units.
Wow,
so she was staying in one of the bigger three beta, and then like she had one or two betas upstairs. Mm. That's what she shared. La. So her idea is that, okay, so she shared that she bought it with her friends. So I give you another perspective. If you look at the buyer profiles, right, you realize that actually only half of it is bought by Singaporeans.
Mm.
The other half of it is actually PR foreigners. Mm. So when they buy into it, it kind of overlaps what you said. Majority of the loss or of the profits are actually made up from one or two beta. That's why it's easier for them to just cut the loss. It's easier for them to just exit.
Mm.
But once they exit, even though the loss is not like very significant, like maybe 1,000 or 2,000 or maybe just 5 digits, they just exit. But in a way, it kind of brings down the whole performance for the development.
Mm. 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 So I think that was also, because this project was launched 2011, 2012, that time the ABSD for foreigners was very, very low.
Mm.
Because the first few rounds of cooling measures started 2009. So that time there was not much impact. Foreigners still come in and purchase a lot. I mean, 27.7% is considered quite a lot. I mean, 18% PR. And I think that also resulted in like the holding power concept lah. Because perhaps like a lot of Singaporeans, they buy for own stay, right? Yeah. Justin, come. Give us a question that you want to answer.
Let me see the question.
This is your first time appearing here.
Yeah, there's a question on the 19th October. It starts with, like the content, but the performance difference is from facilities and the size of project. Cannot conclude it's from 99 or freehold at all. And you only compare the appreciation difference in young age period of a 99 condo. Can you extend the picture to older age?
Why some 99 condos outperform? Oh, okay.
So I feel like the appreciation, even though like we always compare OCR how much, CCR how much, all this stuff, but the ultimatum, right, actually is in the project itself. It's like intrinsic value of the project itself. So we always talk about bank valuation, but actually bank valuation in other words is just the average transactions in my opinion. So I rarely actually need to ask bankers for valuation, because at the end of the day, the bankers, when they give you the number, it just coincides with the transactions or the average transactions that has been happening for the project itself. Then if you look at older age project, I can name you a few like Laguna Park, right? The whole stretch of ECP actually got a lot of old projects. Got one is called Mandarin Gardens. Mandarin Gardens. Yeah. So even though it's a balance leaf left, how much?
50 plus.
Same as Laguna Park, right?
Yeah.
But interestingly, that one not much facility, or even if the facility you have facility, but the facade is not as new as it is anymore, as compared to like seaside residences. But people are still buying into it. So I think the ultimate, it really lies in the performance of the project. When people see that, even though it's old, but there is still an increment in the transaction, this makes it safe to enter. That's number one. Then number two is like you have the whole East Coast plan. Then with like seaside residences being one of the highest and top performing PSF for a 99-year condo, it kind of reiterate that actually it's okay if it's an old project.
Okay. Thanks, Jesley. So for this particular episode, this was the episode basically that I compared between Cover Melody, 99 years, which is about currently about 10 over years, versus Coven
Regency?
No.
Residences?
Esquire or something.
A small project, basically.
Boutique. Okay, so the entire video, I think this is a great question. Thanks for writing in. So the entire video was centered around the fact because there's a lot of dilemma from buyers, like, they are hunting for a property, but they always start to realize that, hey, why is it that even though this is a freehold project, but boutique in size versus a 99 years, even though Comelli is already 10 over years, balance lease, I think left about 80 plus, but why is it that that 99 outperform this? So sometimes the perspective also come from existing owners owning boutique projects. Like they have held it for 10 years and then they're just scratching their heads. Why is it that mine is freehold? I'm staying in this boutique development. I love the privacy. There's only 25 units here. But why is it that my appreciation over the last 10 years was not as good as my neighbor on my right-hand side that is beside the MRT? Even though I'm still walking distance from MRT, I'm just about another 3 minutes away. But that 99 years appreciated much more than my freehold. So this entire video was centered around that. And the key rationale was because of the volume of transactions affecting the speed of valuation uptick. So we center around the very fact that if that project has a huge density, it has a higher chance to hit a higher volume level. Of course, other factors needs to kick in as well. So that was that. But I think the listener was trying to ask, like, how about, perhaps if, I don't know whether I read the question correctly, I think they are trying to ask, are we able to compare the appreciation difference between younger 99 years versus older 99 years? What will be the performance difference and what will be the metrics to determine that? Josh, do you have an answer for this?
I think to build on what Jesse mentioned, right?
Younger 99, maybe I'll take Seaside Residences.
Yeah, so I think you can take Seaside Residences and Laguna.
Versus
Laguna
older
Park.
99.
So Laguna Park, age starts from 1978. Okay. So it's pretty old already.
Right.
I think the mentality of the buyer buying to the older 99 years project, right, will be a bit different. So we talk about bank valuation, so that's one thing. But I think from the buyer's perspective, they'll also be looking. If I want to value space, I will have to rule out new 99 years.
Right.
So perhaps Seaside is out. But of course, Seaside is new. So people that want the facilities, they want something new, they can still go for that. Then they start to look at, in terms of the size, if I go for this one or I go for something that is a landed, maybe the quantum is about the same. But landed, at what price point can I get something today? Maybe they are priced out of the landed and hence they still value the space. They might, and in the area, they don't have much options really. But yet they want to stay within this area. And I think all these values will then add up to say that you can still buy into this older 99 years because they provide the kind of option that around the area is lacking.
All right, Euro, how about you? Thanks, Josh. Any thoughts about younger 99s versus older 99s? Which one can grow better in appreciation?
Okay, I think this is a very generic question, right? And so a lot of times our number one, we don't have a clear-cut answer because we understand that properties, right, have different attributes. And then two buildings have all the different attributes and then we are now streamlining to just talk about the tenure. But generally for this is freehold usually come with smaller land size, lesser number of units, right? For those kind of characteristics of a freehold property, then usually they probably will underperform a 99 years property in a similar location that has a lot more units. Generally, the difference was of volume of transactions. The other thing will be, when it comes to the resale market, the mentality, just now Melvin mentioned of valuation, right? So think of it, today you have a buyer, you are deciding whether you want to buy a leasehold big project or a freehold small project in the same area. Most of the time when you go into the freehold project, right, you like that unit because of the PSF of the freehold property. And then after that, you look at the past transactions. So meaning that when I look at the freehold asking price, it looks very attractive, comparable to the surroundings. But when I look at the past transaction, I realize that, oh, is actually $300 to $4 PSF higher than the last transactions.
Mm.
Right. So hence, there will be a mental block for somebody to want to pay $3 to $4 more.
Mm.
And that's also partly also because sometimes the valuation cannot match up the $300 to $400 more of PSF transactions. Because we always reference to what is recently done, right? If we go to a big project, same thing. I always share, if today you have a big project, your similar layout type, every month there's one unit that was being sold. Every person just sell $10 per square feet more. One year later, your unit will have increased valuation of $120 per square feet. Mm. Assuming that is a 1,000 square feet unit, that will be $120K. Mm. It's easier for people to accept that, last 2 weeks, somebody transacted, today I'm just paying $10 more in a bull run market.
Mm.
Right. So this is one angle. Second thing is, for own stay people, when you go to a freehold, smaller development, they say, I like freehold. Mm. But I realized that, really not much facilities. I don't have that feeling of staying in a private property to allow my family or my young kids to roam around and enjoy.
Mm.
Right. But of course, from a value proposition, freehold definitely is good.
How about this? Thanks on that context. How about this? I think perhaps this question also came from a dilemma that this audience could be a buyer.
Mm.
That, for example, wants to buy a just TOP 1 to 2 years project like Seaside Residences, and the PSF is high, naturally, because of the launch price, TOP price, and now the PSF is at a certain level, versus paying maybe like a lower quantum, lower PSF, not necessarily lower quantum, but because Laguna Park could be like a larger size kind of apartment, but PSF is much lower, but the lease is older. So maybe the question comes from a context like, should I go for Laguna or Seaside? And in 5 years' time, which one might appreciate easier? Yeah, what do you guys think?
I think the answer to the question will vary depending on which period of time we are talking about. But let's say we are talking about, let's say, for example, Seaside, brand new, versus Laguna. Actually, both appreciated, right? And of course, the question we can answer here is, how come an old property can still appreciate? That's one question. But that is because it is located in a very popular district. If today I put this very old leasehold property and I put in a OCR area, and I think that the performance might not be so good. But people who buy into such projects, they might not be concerned over lease decay anymore, because maybe this is their retirement home, they right size, they don't need to think about selling. Mm. They can treat it as a pure rental play. Maybe they just want a bigger space, they cut up into co-living spaces, and they just want to generate yield based on the balance lease.
Mm.
But let's say today, you want the flexibility to be able to enter and exit in a certain time frame. Then we want to ask ourselves, right, when you want to exit this property based on the balance lease and the profile of the potential audience that will come in, will most of them be concerned because they cannot get enough bank loan to finance, or they cannot get used enough CPF to finance this property? So it's more like a financing question. So it will vary accordingly based on different projects, based on different location.
The last done for Laguna at 1615 square feet is at 1,002 PSF. One point is about $2 million. 1978. That means how long already?
54 years.
Okay.
Similar to Mandarin Gardens, actually.
So this one, you get like a solid 3-bedder, super huge hall, super huge kitchen. You can fully renovate, $2 million. PSF is low. Seaside Residences, how much does a 3-bedder cost?
900 over square feet.
2-3.
900 over square feet.
2-4 PSF. For the high floor.
If you get 1,002, probably it's a 3-bed premium, is about 3 mil. 2004 PSF. So which one will you buy, Jesley?
Oh, this is a tough question. This is really boiling down.
You like new or old?
Everyone likes new.
Let's say if you only got 2 million budget, then you are looking between Laguna, you can get a 3-bedder, huge one with 54 years left, but you cannot use your CPF fully because of the withdrawal limit below 60 years. Then you come here, you can get a 2-bedder plus study, 786 square feet, about 2 million.
Okay, this is personal preference, because I'm still young, like only 31 years old. Yes, the idea of like having facilities, the unblocked sea view, or the other side would be the shophouses view. The idea of it being new, it kind of attracts me more. So because I think I can settle in for like a small 2 or 3-bedder. Because it's different. Because I'm going to throw the question back to you. Today, you have 4 kids. Right? You're going to move your whole family into such a quantum. I think like you cannot compromise on the size.
And let's say if I only got 2 million.
Yeah.
Right.
Correct.
Yeah. You know, size is very important. Mm-hmm. Correct, correct. I think I'll just take 1 million and pay off an EM. Then keep $1 million. What will you do with $2 million, you know, if you only got 2 million and you have four kids?
Of course, I will buy as big as a size as possible. But yeah, for me, I will compromise on the location. Actually, I will go further out to buy something that is bigger and is still young.
Yeah, go so, up north to Canberra.
Don't need to be up north. Can be anywhere, north, west, or eastern. Of course, like the better projects in its varying locale. Right. But I think that gives you that flexibility or having the space for the family. I also will not be too concerned that, okay, maybe if I want to exit in 10 years' time, I might want to hope for an en bloc to have a decent exit in terms of pricing. I don't want to sacrifice on my risk for appreciation. So I was changed on location.
Right. Coming to en bloc, right? That day I was at this 99.co event. So I was speaking to about 400 over people. It's a combined seminar by 99.co and Sidley. Then after that, I went outside. We're trying to go back. Then there was a queue forming up of close to about 20 people. Then I sort of feel like I'm like an MP answering Q&A. I stood there for about 1 hour, but it was very fun. Okay, because the questions were extremely interesting. One particular couple came up to me. They mentioned that recently their project just went into like an en bloc, the start of en bloc. And then they asked me, what should the mindset be? Like, how many rounds should they wait if en bloc starts and fails?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I shared with them that somebody was like, 吓死人,我又看到一个 like 女鬼还是什么 at the corner there.
Guest speaker.
Okay. So I shared that the intent of buying a property with hope to get this en bloc, I say is a very big risk for time. Because my own personal opinion is that the mentality to buy an older project, if you really want to hope for en bloc, you should only treat en bloc as a bonus.
Yeah.
Because every round of en bloc, it takes so many hands to clap. There's too many intangibles that needs to happen. You need to hit 80%. That takes a period of time. After that, there's tons of meetings, discussion on the price to bid. Then you have to open tender, let developer bid. Then after that, even if there's a successful bid, sometimes there could be issues, right? Certain people might contest, appeal, and stuff like that. And then if it don't happen, you will then maybe take a period of rest for about 2 years. Then maybe the committee will then restart the en bloc kind of idea again.
Yep.
And every time this happens, you as the owner staying there would just keep thinking, okay, well, this time round didn't happen. But when I look at the proposed tender price, it's so lucrative. It's like double the amount of my entry price. I think I should wait for the next round. Then if next round fail again, then
very
you tell
stressful
I'll wait.
One. Very stressful one.
I mean, we had clients that have waited for a decade already and it still haven't happened.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously it didn't get en bloc because the tender price is not correct. Ma.
Correct.
Yeah, it's not correct for the developers to come in as well. So you're like aiming for something that, of course it looks nice on paper, but it doesn't translate to reality. But of course, I think a balanced strategy is if you want to go for en bloc, then make sure that two things. Number one, you really have the essence of time on your side. And this one can be in line because, you know, your family needs to be in a certain locale for 10, 15 years. So I think you will already have to wait there. That's fine.
Mm.
Second thing, we want to measure risk versus reward. So a lot of times when a lot of people's investment choice, their risk to their reward ratio is they take a lot of high risk going for very little reward.
Mm.
But we should look for investment opportunities where the risk to reward, right, is reward is much better. So, for example, if I would want to go for en bloc, I will probably find something that is a freehold property. Freehold property, and of course, I need to make sure that the land size cannot be too big because it's too hard for developers to digest nowadays because of pricing. So, that's why, for example, like sites like Laguna Park, this kind of billion-dollar kind of en bloc,
a bit
hard to go through because you need multiple developers to come up. So, something where the land pricing 300 to 500 million is more easily digestible. Likely this project needs to have more bigger units. Eventually that they have to
scale down.
The new developer can actually, you know, like build 2.5 times to 3 times more units.
Yep.
And of course the last thing that was when I spoke to another investor. So they say like the old gen people for the freehold property, right? They don't want to en bloc because their concern is about replacement home, correct. Right? So they cannot find back the same location, the same size, even though they are compensated more.
Yes.
So that's one thing. So they will always try to veto against the en bloc, or they must be incentivized with so much monetary rewards, right, for them to say, oh, it's so exciting, it makes sense, yeah, it's going to give me a lot of retirement funds. So when we buy en bloc, right, to a certain extent, we need to wait for
donkeys.
But actually, like, not very nice. But these owners, right,
once there's a group of people that always object.
Okay, yeah. So these owners, right, when... Okay, so this one is quoted from another en bloc investor, not from me. So they need to wait for the owners to expire first. When they pass down as inheritance, the new batch of people surely want to en bloc their one, because to them, they don't have any emotional element inside.
Mm.
And so like, okay, the pricing will be more realistic.
Palatable.
Yeah, more palatable. Actually, more on for it.
Just to add on this, right, personal experience from some of the clients is that I think it's not as rosy as it seems, number one. And if, let's say, assuming you fail, the current owners might not want to wait. And then what's going to happen is they will start to sell. And when they start to sell, if they sell successfully, and it might not be easy to sell because the buyers will definitely read up about the news of past en bloc. And then they also have this fear that if I buy, en bloc really happens, they have to pay the SSD. And then if it really happened, manage to sell, then the 80% will also start to drop. And then they might also find it hard. So I think the waiting period is really
And actually, one last thing is that the sunken cost fallacy is getting heavier and heavier when you are inside that project and then you see this en bloc happen. You got 80% but it failed.
Mm.
Then you wait for the next one. 80% it failed. So the more you wait, the more sunk cost fallacy you have, and then the more you have skin in the game and you want to keep waiting.
Yeah.
Sometimes 3 times the charm. So for a lot of successful projects, they fail before already, adjustment three of the mindset, right? The third time got a higher chance. So like we've seen like from some of the successful en blocs. But of course, we also have a lot of projects that after third time still trying.
Right. Okay, let's move on to the next topic. Bayshore BTO. There's going to be 7,000 units of BTO and 3,000 units of private homes. I think it's going to be exciting. Based on the article on Straits Times, this will likely be classified as a plus project in line with what happened during National Day Rally by our Prime Minister talking about the eradication of mature versus non-mature. Now we're all talking about standard, plus and prime. We had one episode on NOTG. We'll provide the link below that talks about standard, plus, prime impact, ripple effect on the resale market, as well as actually how you can actually strategize to own one HDB and one condo through a period of between 5 to 10 years once you hit your MOP. Jessly, what's your thoughts on this announcement of the first two plot of BTO? Do you think this is going to be like a fantastic, exciting place? And this whole thing, based on the papers, they say that it will be completed in the mid-2030s, but the first batch here is going to be launched next year.
Yeah, it's going to be launched in 2024, Q2 onwards. I think, first of all, this is a much awaited, like a long awaited kind of transformation for the whole East Coast.
It's like a full sea view.
No, you need to understand the dynamics of East Coast. It's all condos, all landed. And the only HDB is in Marine Parade
Central.
And they are balanced.
50 plus years.
Correct.
已经很老了,
but
well, so this project is very short. This is a brand new town, right?
Yes, it's a brand new
town. That's why the HDB over there, right, all hit $1 million because no other stock to buy. Then this one
50 over years still got $1 million. Yeah, so this is a much awaited kind of a HDB growth that is needed in the whole of East Coast. Like I personally have been advocating about East Side, West Side.
This is like New York, the Central Park. Look at this. The name of New York, Bayshore Central Park. So you can like just look at this whole thing and the sea view. There's also going to be like a row of shops and retail, right? Is it this thing?
Yeah.
Is this corridor? This,
yeah. With an extremely wide pedestrian pathway.
If you see the design, right? They actually allows a lot of pockets of sea view, even if you are inside. Realize that.
So, Jessly, what do you think is going to be the price of the BTOs here?
Goodness.
I mean, it's not released.
Can remind me
a forum.
Of
just talk about a forum.
Can remind me of a BTO launch, the newest launch in Ang Mo Kio again?
Ang Mo Kio, I think got 5 room.
Got 5 room.
I think it's 700.
700,000.
700 over 1,000 for 4 room.
700.
Yeah.
Then this is...
And not near MRT one, I remember.
Yeah, not near MRT.
So 700, okay, makes sense. It's a central area, Ang Mo
Kio. But this one is east side.
This is the central of east side, you know.
East is actually considered
this
RCR.
Is East, eh.
This
D16.
Is best of both worlds.
D16 is considered OCR.
Wannabe.
One street.
This is the start of OCR.
Yeah, one street away will be Siglap, will be RCR already.
Correct.
Yeah. What do you think will be the price? Will it be like 900,000, Jess Lee? What do you
think?
I think price point should be 800.
Yeah.
700 to 800 for a 5-room. Yeah, this is what? There is 5-room here, right? Okay, OCR.
I don't know whether you're
They room. Haven't announced
so
yet.
So far, yeah, so far it's all just 4 rooms.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if it's going to be launched under Plus, it's going to be enhanced subsidy because in future they're going to claw back.
Claw back.
I mean, there was like an article talking about batch with a 6% clawback or something like that. So what do you think will be the price of a typical 4-room, Josh?
I think over here, starting price should be around 800,000. Mm. I think that should be the kind of range. Maybe those premium one with sea view, I think definitely there'll be price disparity and those will definitely be pricier.
What do you think, Yurong, will be the price of a launch here?
I think 3,000 units. I think a 4-room flat.
Private.
I mean, foreign flat for the BTOs, right? Probably high 600 plus thousand. Right. Maybe the highest one really crossed that 800K mark. La. But that is, of course, change. I think it will be probably at 600 plus thousand on upwards.
Why?
Because actually, I'm just looking at the different prime location housing projects that have been launched since the last 2 years. Mm. Basically, in central location, the starting price is like 580K like that.
Right.
Yeah. So I assume that this is another 1 more year to go.
Likely probably, to be that price.
Yeah, so likely 600 plus starting pricing. But if you can get the grants, basically the introduction of this policy is to ensure that, you know, like we don't need very high income because with the right subsidy, we take away the lottery effect where people who just want to buy a house, flip it, you know, like after it MOPs, right? So the demand from speculative viewers should be lesser and then that would probably will allow higher chance of people who want to have long-term stay to get into a good location with good subsidy from the government.
Right. What do you think will be this integrated development PSF? Mm. It's going to be launched. It's going to be mounted on top of Bedok South MRT station.
Correct.
By the way, Bedok South has the food center has the best cheng tng if you have not eaten yet.
$3.
Yeah. $3 per bowl.
But there's one more hidden at Bedok North there. It's called Wu Ming.
No name.
Yeah, legit.
No name.
Oh, is it at the hawker center?
No, it's below the HDB one.
Oh, okay. Never eat before. We'll try. Okay, how much do you think will be PSF integrated?
2.5 or 2.5, 2.6.
Yeah.
What do you think is going to happen to the existing resale condos around this area?
The pricing will be uplifted, like, definitely.
Mm.
For me, if I'm an investor in this local, I think I'll be more interested in that 3,000 private properties that are going to launch. I'm not going to care about the HDB because HDB 2024 launch, completion 2029. 10 years of MOA 2039.
2040 already.
Yeah, 2039. Yeah. So unless I already decide that forever I'm going to be here, I'm going to stay put here for the next 15 years, then I think it's okay. The HDB could, the sellers could be my potential upgraders.
So we can only see the upgrading effect in 2039. Oh. 29, for the first batch.
For the first batch.
The rest of the batch will be 2040 plus.
And in fact, I don't think there will really be a lot of like upgraders.
I'll be like 60 plus. Just 15 years.
Actually, you all need to take a look at like what's happening to the plus flats because there's a lot of restrictions.
Sure.
Okay, first, you have your 10-year MOP.
Yeah,
right. You cannot rent out the whole place after MOP. This one is the interesting one. Now, resale buyers of plus flat must meet the income ceiling. Currently, it's 14,000. So next time when the MOP, when you as a resale buyer, you want to buy into this project again, you still need to fulfill the income ceiling. I think this is the toughest part.
Yeah, 政府太厉害了。
Which means the buyer that buys into here, right? I think they definitely need to have more cash or more CPF to down more.
Yeah. 14,000 MSR work backwards, the max you can go is about $1 million already. That's all.
I'm not done yet. So let's say you say, okay, you want to buy into this as a resale buyer, you need a lot of cash, right? Usually who has a lot of cash? when you have, when you own a private property and
correct.
Then you sell it, right?
Then that's the next catch.
The next catch is that there will be a 30 months wait out period for private property owners.
That means if you want to buy the HDB, you need to plan 30 months in advance. Okay, I want to buy here already. I better sell first. And I say, I got a place to stay. Then after that, I can go and buy.
Yes, correct.
And you want to rent first, but they're not allowed to rent to you.
Yeah, correct.
So what do you think will be the fate of BTO properties?
Okay, yeah. Because now, after 55 years old, you still can buy a...
4-room.
You still can buy a 4-room. Yeah,
without waiting time.
If, let's say, things... Okay, this is my prediction. My prediction is that private owners will want to right-size, right, into the resale BTO. They are still new, you know, newly MOP, all this. This will be your supply of buyers.
I think how it will affect the BTO projects over there. If you take a look at the Bayshore area, there's this new cluster, Bedok South Horizon. Mm-hmm. So this Bedok South Horizon, right, is attached to Siglap CC, where you have the indoor basketball court.
Okay.
And then you have McDonald's, you have Sheng Siong. And the best thing about that cluster, I think that cluster will benefit greatly. Because if you look at Bedok South MRT exit B, it is just directly below the HDB cluster.
152A in that side.
Yeah. So this is actually a new cluster. In fact, right, the high floor ones, you get a sea view. Of course, you don't get a full floor to ceiling.
But it'll be blocked.
It might be blocked, but eventually they will also benefit from the conveniences. And these are the cluster that should fall under the plus category, but because of the old ruling, then they are under the BTO cluster. So I think this will definitely quite in high demand for the HDB cluster over there.
Right. So there was also this new ruling that came out in August 2023 on like a penalty block out period for first time applicants. If let's say they declined to book a flat, they were invited, they will be relegated to a second timer status for 1 year. And then if they still decline to choose a flat, they'll be blocked from all BTO exercises for another year. So this has dropped the so-called like application rate to about 1.7 times instead of like the previous round that, you know, people find it very difficult to get an application. What do you think will be the trend moving forward?
I think it might cause a lot of...
Do you think there'll be a glut?
Uncertainty and fear. That means like for the buyers that perhaps they got a queue number, but last time I think a lot of buyers, they view HDB or BTO as a lottery effect. But I think with all these measures in place, I think some of them might still want to take a bet. They don't mind paying, I don't know what's the penalty, and then they might just go for the next one. The BTO.
My own personal forecast is that I think resale properties near MRT will get an increase kind of like a attention because of all this like Standard Plus and Prime.
Exactly.
Yeah. What do you think, Yuro?
I think this is a very good policy. I think in fact, I think that will increase the matching rate for people who are really serious. They know they want a BTO because they understand the penalty of not going through. So basically, you are going to have probably lesser applicants, more serious buyers, then they are going to match. And let's say, for example, if let's say I am somebody that applied, I'm serious. Mm. But eventually, the choice that was given to me, let's say, is I need to choose, okay, like second floor. I am just beside the bin chute. Or like then in front got expressway some more, maybe lah. Then maybe in this kind of scenario, I might need to bite the bullet and say, I really cannot accept, right? So then I will just relegate to a second timer status. But if we assume that the application rate becomes higher, usually second timer status only 5% of the stock of supply is reserved for second timers, right? So if I'm reserved to a second timer statement, then likely I will go and try resale properties really.
Mm.
Because the chance of getting as a second timer is not high unless I'm really in the outside central region location, not near MRT station.
Right. Do you all think all these new policies, right, because of the plus and prime, firstly, you need to fulfill MOP of 10 years. Secondly, when you want to sell, there's a subsidy clawback. Thirdly, if you want to keep the HDB, you want to bite the bullet and pay ABSD for your second property, which is a condo, while you still want to hold this. Now, with the fact that you cannot rent out the whole unit, it doesn't make sense to buy plus and prime if you have that intent to own a HDB and a condo. What do you think is going to happen to the HDB upgraders market? Because there was an article here that talked about the number of HDB upgraders due falls because of possibly more higher PSF condos, higher ABSD. But maybe Jesse, share with us, like, usually when your clients, when you sold off their HDB for them and they have an intent to upgrade to a private property, right? What kind of condos usually do they buy? Usually, like, what are they hunting for? Maybe share with us, like, your, based on the ground, what do you see in the HDB upgraders market?
I do have like two cases that I have deal with last year in 2022. They live around Bedok Reservoir Road or Reservoir View. There is a cluster of HDBs over there. The idea is that because they are worried about the lease, number one. Number two, they have two kids, two young kids. So they wanted the kids to enjoy some of the facilities. Mm. So it's a very Singapore standard way of upgrading. When you say there is no, it's not really like a, oh, I want to invest and I want to earn money from my condo. They don't have this kind of a concept. They just purely want to upgrade to a condo. So
for
that
the lifestyle?
Kids, yes, it's for the lifestyle.
Okay.
So when we sold the HDB around 890K, that was back in February last year. Mm. We brought them around because the whole Bedok Reservoir only got that
money?
Stretch off.
Did they make money from HDB?
Yes, of course. Okay. They made money from the HDB. But later I will compare like how much money would they have made if they never make the change. And now that they made the change, what is the difference in terms of the pricing? Mm. So they sold the HDB at 890K. We went to Waterfront Keys. Mm. It's a three bedder. We bought in two months later at 1.72. So just now I went to take a look at how the performance has been like for the three beta there. Currently, highest transactor is at 1.92.
For the same size.
Same size.
200,000 in 1 year.
In 1 year. Today, yeah, we are in 2023 October. Yeah, in 1 year. Then I go back and go and see how much the HDB appreciated. They bought in, we sold it at 890K. Now highest transactor, 920K.
30K.
Yeah, so 30K difference for the same period.
Compared to 200,000.
Correct. So let's say that you think that, Jesse, this one is like accelerated because COVID times. Then never mind. We bring you to after pre-COVID. Me and Jonathan, we helped our EM seller in Yishun sold at the price of 868,000. Same, but they are just a couple, but they wanted to upgrade. They have been living in this generous size of an EM. So the only, the smallest that they can accept was a four bedder as a couple.
When was that? Which year was that?
This year.
Oh, just only, okay.
Just this year. Yeah, so they just wanted facility, but they cannot compromise on the size. So they live in Yishun. So for Yishun upgraders, you want to talk about condo, where will you go to? New ones.
Canberra.
There's a reason why I look at you. Correct. Just wanted to prompt you to say that. So Canberra has a few resale EC. Very attractive.
Okay, sorry. How much they sold the EM again?
868.
Okay.
1,000.
Nice number.
Nice number. Then we went to buy a 4 beta at 1.4 million. Visionaire. 1141 square feet. So today, this one is just this year. So we sold the HDB in July, bought the resale in August. So I just went to check. So even though now we are in only October, it's just 2 months. So they bought at 1.4. Now the transacted prices is at 1.48 to 1.5. Just 2 months. Then I went to the HDB again. The highest transacted is still us. Not much changes. All in all, I feel that...
So in 2 months, it's about 80 or 100K already.
Yes, correct. What I feel for HDB is like... it does increase in terms of pricing, but it's like a fixed deposit. Right? You have a certain percentage of increment when it comes to like 20K or 10K. But you need to remember who is at the top. At the top is our Akong. And if you look at the HDB website, right, about ASA, the mission, right, is to provide affordable housing. Public housing. Yeah. So they will always live by this mission. And whatever that they do, I really appreciate. Because their lifelong mission is to make it such that there will still be a house for our next future generation. Yeah. So even though you feel like, wow, 很贵耶, but actually we can still be, I wouldn't say like we cannot afford. It's just that maybe we are not legible because of the increased stress test, because of the increased ABSD, buyer stamp duty. But all of this, it's a lifelong mission from the government so that our future generation can have something to buy.
With the grants and everything.
Yes, correct.
Yeah. And there's still a lot of resale options. If you cannot really afford like the high price prime areas HDB, you can still go to the OCR region, get an older HDB apartment and all that. You're actually going to read the HDB about us.
Yeah.
The mission.
No, because mission like, statement. Because when during COVID, the price was hitting $1 million for all the HDB. To be honest, my thought was like, this is crazy.
Mm.
HDB is supposed to be a public housing. It cannot be this kind of price.
So you go double check, did they change their mission?
Like, did they change their mission? Did they change their mission to only profit public, you know, only profitable public housing? So I went to check. No, leh.
Yeah, it's just the same.
The mission state that it must be affordable. Then the cooling measure come in, then it kind of like soothe my heart a bit.
Okay.
No, but I mean, eventually all HDB will reach $1 million. Given enough time, I mean, we expect there's inflation, we expect our income to go up. So of course, asset prices will also go up. Mm. It's just, you know, like...
Except the old ones lah. Except the, those like really, really old.
Of course, like the really old ones, because we know that the final point is zero ma. Mm. Right? But generally wise, I think it is okay for HD to appreciate as well. Just that, you know, like overall, of course, like what Jesse mentioned, policy makers have to ensure that the next generation is also taken care of. If not, our home ownership rate will drop. Ma.
Yes.
Yeah. In fact, it has dropped a little bit. It used to be about 91, now it's about 89.3. Yeah.
Actually, we've been talking about price, right?
Yeah.
I think there's another interesting aspect to look at, especially for the plus and the prime flats, which I think is the social impact.
Mm.
So let's say anyone were to buy into this type of flats and then, I don't know, due to their family plans and they have certain changes, I think it will also have a huge impact because they might find it harder to sell. And I'm not sure what's the kind of social impact that family might have. If let's say, you know, they need to migrate or they need to downsize due to whatever reasons. And I don't know whether will this like 10 years holding period as well as the restriction for the buyers cause a fair bit of stress to the homeowners when they want to sell. I mean, money-wise and dollars aside, I think this could be another social impact that have to be considered into as well.
Yeah. Yuro, how about yourself? What was your... like some of the most recent cases whereby you on the ground you have helped like a HDB upgrader family, usually what are they buying?
I mean I cannot recall from the top of my mind. Okay. Like HDB upgraders, usually
your clients are all high net worth.
I mean like usually it's like we expand a portfolio condo to condo or like starting first purchasing first buyer, right? Okay. So like maybe they wanted to start off with a HDB and then I will analyze their financials. I give them an example of like why maybe it is actually okay for them to start with a private property. So not at the top of my mind. I think like maybe if you zoom back previously, maybe a lot of HDB upgraders, we go the EC route, right? Actually.
Right. You advise them.
Okay, like
to
because
go for brand new ECs.
For brand new ECs, right. Sometimes.
Right. What's your rationale?
Because I'm not talking about the recent EC kind of pricing, which is like 1,003, 1,004, right? At that point in time, those were like $800 PSF. At that point in time, there was a glut of EC in balance the sense that there is a lot of EC choices, right? So hence, most of the time, it's like I like a oversupply situation if I'm a buyer, right? So for example, when I have multiple projects of similar attributes that are launching, the developers will price it very sensitively. As a buyer, I can pick the best project, best spacing, best layout. Most of the time nowadays, it's like, oh, only have like one EC choice that is being launched in every like 2 months.
Mm.
You like, then you buy lor.
Yeah.
Right. And then of course, you know, like it will be harder for you to find a better deal. But overall, I think EC, even though not 1,000, 3,004, because there is still a good 35% kind of discounted pricing compared to the new launch counterparts private property. So I think it's still a viable option.
Yeah, 1,000, 3,000, 4 versus like 1,009, 2,000 is still about $600 difference. Talking about the supply glut last time that you were mentioning on ECs, I remember there were some transactions. There was also a family that we helped to successfully exit, right? I saw their purchase date is like, they were like one of the last batches that bought Forestville balance unit. It's like once they buy, next year, TOP already. So they have an advantage of a very short waiting period.
Mm.
So once they're technically their MOP is about the same as the same first people that bought. So I think they got an advantage. They also saw like a pretty huge gain from that large apartment. So but of course now there's no supply glut. George, how about yourself? What do you think about like usually what kind of properties are your clients buying from HDB? Have you ever had clients that from a HDB apartment jump straight to a landed property, or usually like do they buy two or
Okay, so I have one client. We met up with them. They were actually comparing with different agencies. Right. So of course they come with us. We share more on that. So the strategy, the analogy and the strategy that we adopt is we want them to, after they sell, how they can potentially use the funds to the maximum potential. Mm. So one strategy that we adopt is they go into the newly MOP ECs. Why is that so? I think just now, Jesse also mentioned, it's also because there will be a lot of transaction volume. So I still think that after the EC MOP, when they buy into that,
straight away.
Yeah.
Once the MOP go in.
Yeah. That means before that, they start to plan already. So we actually met them about, I think 4 or 5 months before. So we start to choose a stack already. So when the unit comes along, they go. And usually why I believe
you can still write one more round.
Yeah, because that is actually still considered a first mover advantage. And there will actually be a lot of transactions that will happen for a lot of EC owners that wants to exit and then they want to move out from there. So actually when they bought in about last year ago, they entered about 1,100 odd PSF.
Which project was that?
Bellwoods.
Right.
Right now, the transaction have actually went up by about 100 PSF already. Okay. So, and we are talking about places at Woodlands, and they bought. So they were asking, okay, I choose the development. Which type of unit should I go for?
Mm.
So then we start to look at the segregation in terms of the bedrooms. They are family of four. So we tell them, why don't you just go for a 4-bedder?
Mm.
Because 3-bedders are the majority, which is the case for most of the OCR. And then 4-bedder have the rarity effect. So then we advise them to go into the 4-bedder.
Mm.
But of course, 4-bedders, there's also different type of sizes. So we tell them, don't need to go excessively big because a higher quantum, maybe at the area, not all the buyers can afford at that quantum. So then they go for a 4-bedder. I think the PSF, entry PSF is attractive, 1-1 over PSF. And there's still a lot of other projects back then that has yet to MOP. So back then, projects like Visionaire, all these haven't reached MOP period. So I think there's definitely still the first mover advantage. So they buy into this one, they set aside some of the cash plus the savings from the HDB, they bought into another new launch in another area. So I think they are spreading themselves, but not thinly. Why they buy into a new launch is also because of the progressive payment.
Mm.
And that's quite comfortable for them.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
Right. I remember upgraded story already.
Okay.
Oh,
sure.
So this was last year. So
I was smiling when you
because I was just looking at like the clients and the families that I helped, right? So I was trying to see when was the last time I helped somebody change from HDB to a condo. I mean a lot of the HDB cases that I do, they fall into more retirement planning for the recent years. So for this last case was last year. So what happened was we sold off the HDB. Based on the calculation, I advised that we should buy a 3-bedder in upcoming area. So eventually we saw the 3-bedder. At a point in time, it was about like 1.5 million. Mm. I said, this is a good buy. You should buy this. Eventually, the decision was to buy something that is smaller because they only need a 2-bedder. It's just a couple.
Mm.
And if I had no point spending so much on my monthly installment, you know, like going for a bigger unit. So in the end, we end up to buy something like close to like 1.2 something for like a 2-bedder. Fast forward 1 year's time, that 2-bedder now appreciated by about 30K. And that 3-bedder appreciated by about 250K.
How many years was that?
1 year.
From what year to what year?
Last year to this year.
Within 1 year.
Yeah.
So it's after COVID already.
After COVID.
Mm. 3-bedder appreciated by 1.5 mil to 1.7 already.
Now the price is 1.7.
Can you share with us which project is
this? No lah, cannot tell you. Cannot tell. No.
Never mind, I'll go and check for our database. And share with the audience what project is this?
Yeah.
Somewhere in the...
You don't need to say the unit number.
No, as in, I think too confidential already.
Really?
Yeah.
Which district?
We don't even know who the seller is.
13?
13.
Park Colonia.
No.
MacPherson.
Okay.
Sky.
But let me summarize what Yurong is trying to say.
Oh, okay. Potong Pasir lah, confirm.
No, not Potong Pasir. No, not Potong Pasir. The summary is that, like, number one, we just want to have okay, and Jesse can summarize. Sorry, once you say you know.
I think okay. I know. Yeah, I think summarize. I know. I think I know. Because I think I share the same perspective. Is that we always want to advocate the correct bedroom types to all our buyers. Yeah. And I think the minimal that anyone should buy into is a three-bedder. The idea is that, let's say today you're a HDB upgrader. You have a four-room, five-room. How many bedrooms is that? 3 rooms. So once you need to upgrade to a condo, that is a three-bedder condo. Cannot move anything downwards. Mm. Cannot be a two-bedder. Cannot be a two-bed plus study also.
Mm.
It must be a proper three-bedder. At least 900 over square feet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the other side of it, let's say you have a landed downgrader. They're so used to being in their space, right? They have a 3.5 stories and stuff, but they no need to have such a big space. The kids are all married out. It's just the elderly couple staying in a huge landed. The minimum, I tried to help my client find a two-bedder condo. She's a landed downgrader, but she say, cannot, Jessly. Cannot. So I really small. Cannot. I got too many things already. Because all the staff also need to move into the condo. The minimal that she accepted is still a 3-bedder condo. So this 3-bedder condo is like, I would say shortage in supply, but it's something that everyone needs.
Mm.
Like it's not a quantum anymore. It's just purely based on lifestyle for a 4-room, 5-room HDB when they want to upgrade. It needs to be a 3-bedder. And for landed to downgrade, into a condo, minimum also 3-bedder. Yeah. Is this what
basically
is this what
it's you're a, basically it's a good sweet spot lah. Basically for the upstream as well as for downstream, right? And actually end of the day will be we are focusing on like their higher percentage of own use buyers, which is more important. Smaller bedroom type, there will be more investor element. They are more concerned about entry price, rental yield versus to go into an exact project because they need to be near a specific school, near workplace, near their parents' home, etc. But just to caveat, it is okay to kick off with a 1-bedder or a 2-bedder.
Yes, of course.
Because everybody is like going up a staircase, right? Mm. So the first step, rather than trying to save up to be out of the market, it is better to be in the market on the right property. Usually, the appreciation would outpace individual savings rate lah. Unless this person can tell me can save 300k, 400k a year one, okay, then maybe can wait half a year to buy into the next tier lah.
Yeah, yeah. So just now as you were talking about this 2 and 3-bedder analogy, right? What was your conclusion?
Well, the conclusion, all the statistics that we have done, our research team, we always mention that even in the same project, same timeline, entry price, 1-bedder.
Does your client know about this?
No, I never... I mean, I recommend that to back, get a 3-bedder.
You should have bought the 3-bedder.
Okay, but maybe they were at a different season. They are in a retirement mode, is it?
They are still very young. Good income.
But they want to go on a lower leverage point.
Yes.
Okay, okay.
Yes.
I mean, they have their own rationale.
But most of the time when I look back,
you feel like,
I will feel a bit sayang. But generally, the clients that work with me, right, about close to 85% of them will take my advice directly. Mm. So some when we go and buy new launch investment, right? I choose the unit for them. I tell them, okay, this unit number specifically.
Mm. Just buy this.
Yeah. So usually those, they probably end up with pretty good results. Those 15%, they decide
to contest you one. You can invite them to the
live
debate.
They never contest. Just like, you know, like they were
a live debate. We can set a live debate for you. 1v1, this unit versus that unit.
Back then, why didn't you listen to me?
No, because end of the day is your own fine decision. I give the recommendation. But of course, everybody will want to make the best decision for themselves based on whatever they know, the full picture, right?
Mm.
So, yeah.
Okay. By the way, yesterday I was at Casa Rosa filming the home tour. Jessly and Tiffany's listing. Then I was doing the CMA. I was looking at all the Butley projects. It's like to get a 3-bed compact is already about 1.8. 1.9, anything
based on asking price.
3-bed premium is about 2 to 2.2. Is like, we're now at like a whole brand new level of 3-bedroom pricing already for like the newer high rise big density project. And that brings us to the final question, because this was on 3rd October, the first time that you see the flash estimate By the way, our PRB quarterly report is out. If you are interested, you can actually head on to our editorial website called prbinsights.com. You'll be able to click on the link to access our latest quarterly report done by our research team. It's a free download. You just need to key in your email address. We'll be very happy to share that report with you. Now, when this came out, immediately I asked our research team to do like a fact find to understand on this statement, because there was this portion that said that the landed property portion had a dip. So we came up with this article to find out which particular segment within the landed segment caused that dip. There was a dip of 4.9% on the property price index. This is like the largest quarterly decline since 2009. And this decline sort of end the 25.1% run up since 2021. Okay, so after we fact find into RealList, which is a URA database, we sieve out the entire database. This was what was conceptualized based on quantum pricing. And we separate by detached, semi-D, and terrace. So terrace is a yellow line. In fact, actually, the last quarter it still went up. Semi-D came down on the previous quarter, went up again. This was the decline. So technically, the whole property price index of the landed segment was led on by the detached decline. Let me just move down a little bit more. And then we realized that in terms of the average PSF, it was also largely attributed to these two districts, 10 and 11, in terms of the PSF level, which technically, if you saw this, there was like a sharp jump over here over the last two quarters, all the way from like an average PSF of 1,008 shooting up to 2008. So we also need to fact find what caused this sharp jump. What were the transactions that caused it? Likely could be like very brand new landed properties that was being transacted. And then of course it came down here. Maybe over the last two quarters, it was mainly resale kind of detached houses. And then we also did this as well to go with the five regions, north, south, east, west, and northeast. by detached, and then largely it was led on by central, west, and east. In fact, northeast and north still went up. And last but not least, the average PSF, and of course the transaction volume of DDEN. So the research team really went to deep dive quite a fair bit of this time. And the transaction volume was actually quite low in the last quarter here. So perhaps there was a couple of transactions that caused this dip over here. Any thoughts, guys, on this?
I don't know whether this dip in terms of the transaction, I believe these are the older landed plots. And maybe these are the plots that perhaps like developer, they buy and then they want to, they buy in at the low PSF, and maybe it's like, I don't know, a row of properties, and then they can go and apply to redevelop into like strata lender or stuff like that. So I believe, I don't think it tells the full story, but perhaps we also need to see what type of properties has been transacted. Likely it should be the Cat 1, older type, maybe huge land plot. PSF will naturally be lower and it could translate into the dip, but I don't think it tells the full picture.
Right. I'll try to get the exact data and then we feedback based on next NOTG as well. Ooh. Anyway, the next NOTG, we're going to do like a full AMA session. It's like we're going to do like answer all the questions that has been lagged since June because I was just trying to look through all the questions our team tabulated. There was a lot of good Q&A questions, so we'll do an AMA series. And any final words for our audience, guys? Jessly?
No, it's okay.
You're wrong.
Wishing everyone a beautiful week ahead.
George?
Always stay in the property market.
Okay, what are our next few events coming up? The next four webinars are going to be very interesting, because the next four webinars, we're going to focus individually on each type of residential property, on outlook for 2024, landed condos, new launch. But the end of this one, we're going to have like one full forecast on the whole real estate market for 2024, and whether should you wait out 2024 to... based on whatever reasons that maybe you might be thinking about in terms of like market risk and stuff like that. So we're going to address, and based on hard research. So our research team will be getting into a very busy season, and we hope to see you on the next couple of webinars. So if you want to sign up for our webinars, do scan this QR code or click on the link down below in the box. That will bring you to our PRB webinar page, and we hope to see you on the next NOTG Home Team Banter with our home team. All right, cheers.
他还有做那个 Excel sheet 出来，还要 show 那个 comparison 的。I just now I go there, I see Excel sheet and say, hey, what are you doing? Huh, for the NOTG? Huh, what NOTG?